Good morning and welcome to Second Breakfast with Lucas and Phil. I'm Lucas.
I'm Phil.
And we want to welcome you today to another episode of Second Breakfast.
With Lucas and Phil.
Yeah.
There are quite a few podcasts named Second Breakfast.
It's true. And you know, I think we're the only one that's not about Lord of the Rings, though.
It's true.
Yeah,
although we like Lord of the Rings.
We do like Lord of the Rings.
We have nothing against Lord of the Rings. Some of our best friends are Lord of the Rings. What?
I don't... Okay. Thanks, Phil.
It's a Seinfeld thing.
Yeah, I never was a huge watcher of the Seinfeld.
Oh, man.
So.
You say I don't like Parks and Rec and The Office, but I do. I just haven't watched every episode. But I have watched every episode of Seinfeld.
Yeah. Is that something to be
multiple
proud
times?
Of?
It is. It's just a generational thing.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm from the Seinfeld generation.
I've watched a few episodes, Seinfeld and Frasier, right? They were about the same time period.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that works. Yeah,
very
I watched
nice.
Every episode of Frasier.
Nice.
But see, my wife watched Frasier with me. She will not watch Seinfeld.
Oh. Does she think it's stupid?
Something. I don't know. It's just not her thing. You know, it's not... There's certain things I know. Like you like... You and I both like Last Man on Earth, right?
Yes.
I love it. My wife,
funny.
No.
Although, Last Man on Earth, you've only watched some of the first
season,
right?
Season one, yeah.
So, show completely changes as you watch it. And I just want to let any of our listeners know. They're like, oh, I'm going to go watch that because they both love it. Season one is a completely different animal than like season four.
All right, well.
It's more serious and a lot more... dark humor.
Yeah,
which it's about the last few people on Earth.
Yeah.
Like it's gonna be kind of dark to begin with, so
yeah. I'm not a big dark humor guy. I like things light. I like things happy,
light and airy.
There's enough darkness in the actual world.
Well, and then like the show, you know, it still shows death and there's these serious moments, and I'm like, I watch a sitcom to escape sadness.
Yes, exactly right. So
I'm trying to distract myself.
Speaking of escaping sadness,
yes,
what's the best thing you had to eat this week?
Well, we did go to Burnco last Friday. You brought Burnco
right
to my house.
Yeah.
That was delicious. It was so good. And then close second, and actually you're right up there, Tori made some meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and then peas and cheese, which is just
peas and cheese.
One of my favorite like comfort meals of all time.
Like, peas and cheese. That sounds like something like a name you would call, like you'd get called in... kindergarten. I don't know. Come here, peas and cheese. I don't know. Why does that sound like...
It's a real thing. Like my dad's mom, my granny, she used to make that growing up. Like this was one of her signature meals. Meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and then peas.
Explain peas and cheese to me, Lucas.
Okay, so it's peas, like the, you know, the vegetables.
Peas. Wait, let me guess. And cheese.
Yeah, and you melt. So it's Velveeta and milk, and you melt that down.
Oh, all right. See.
Then you put peas in it and mix it all up. So then it's like this.
It's kind of like creamed
pea soup.
Kind of like creamy.
Yeah,
peas.
And so you put it.
Really, like cream corn, except with peas.
Exactly. But the best way to do it is you take the mashed potatoes, you put the peas and cheese on them, so it's like a cheesy mashed potato, and then you don't even taste the peas.
Amen.
Which is the best part. And then the meatloaf is delicious. So, and meatloaf is one of those dishes where I can't say I love meatloaf. I really love my wife's meatloaf.
Yeah.
I love my grandma's meatloaf. My mom makes great meatloaf.
Yeah.
But I've also had some meatloafs that I'm like, wow, that's interesting.
Meatloaf.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks. Yeah. Well, the best thing I had to eat this week was also Burnco ribs.
Mm.
Although I just have to say, you know, that costs a lot of money.
Oh my goodness.
We ordered in and we're like, just give us this. When I order this way, just give me this and this and this and this and that. It's pretty expensive. But the thing about Burnco is the meat is just such great quality.
It is. So, and
everything.
We talked about it. Burnco, it's worth trying at least once.
Yeah.
But it's so expensive. It's better than other barbecue or most other barbecue. But it's not, to me, it's not $45 better than the other barbecue.
Although I'm going to shout out my buddy Brian, who is a pit master for Rib Crib and a store manager for Rib Crib downtown, or was downtown. I'm not sure. I've kind of lost track of him, but he may...
Tulsa's own Rib Crib.
Makes Tulsa's own Rib Crib downtown. The ribs there... At least as good as Burnco.
Really?
At least as good. And I mean, and I had, and I told him, he and I had had this conversation that, like, I don't really, you know, I'm kind of a Burnco rib guy. You're really going to have to sell me on the ribs. And so I went into his restaurant and I don't order ribs because I'm like, yeah, I only want certain ones. He brings me one just gratis, you know, and it was just amazing. So, yeah. So shout out to Brian. Shout out
we
to
We need
rib
to have
crib.
Lucas and Phil's barbecue episode sometime.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the problem with Rib Crib to me is like the downtown one might have some of the best ribs, but it's not like every Rib Crib
has
the best ribs.
Yeah, so, we went to one recently that was kind of like, oh, all right, well, this is a place to eat.
Now, the best ribs I've had, and the deal is it's because Burnco's has those really short ribs. They have the short ribs, which are just tiny.
Yeah.
Famous Dave's Barbecue in Branson.
Yeah.
Some of the best ribs I've ever had in my life.
I think we used to have a Famous Dave's here.
Best barbecue chicken comes from Spencer's Barbecue in Midwest City, Oklahoma.
Okay.
Which, go sometime. It's the best barbecue sauce. My favorite barbecue sauce.
Oh, okay.
So good. So good.
I'm not a chicken eater.
Yeah. And then brisket. So brisket's much. Hard to screw up. I've had some screwed up brisket, but if you can keep it juicy, I've had some really good brisket. It's just expensive.
The best brisket I've had, this is all going to get cut out because this is not what this episode is about. Although maybe not. Who knows? We might not cut it all out. Best brisket, I have to say, there is a guy in Broken Arrow. It's called StuBQ.
Yeah.
His name is Stu something.
BQ.
He's a friend of a friend of mine. And my buddy said, you got to get this guy's brisket. And it's just unbelievable. So, so there's good barbecue right here in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah. Tulsa's known for some great barbecue. Like Rip Crip. I didn't realize it started here. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, you know what? We forgot to open the little audience window and let them say,
good morning. Welcome to Second Breakfast with Lucas and Phil.
Good morning,
everybody.
Hey, we're glad you're here.
Yeah. So, what are we talking about today? Oh, wait, it's not time to talk about what we're talking
about
today.
No, Phil, come on. Although, it's time for some orange juice.
OJ.
Orange juice. Gen Z word of the week. Yeah. You ready?
Ba-doom. Yeah.
I have to start off by saying this may not actually be a Gen Z word, more of like a millennial word, but it's all new stuff.
It's just something you think I won't know because I'm old.
Yes.
All right.
Here we go. JOMO. Phil, are you dead?
I'm here. JOMO. Well, I know what FOMO is. Fear of missing out.
Okay. Okay.
So what would JOMO be? It would be... I'm going to say it's, no, I have no idea. I have to come up with something. Don't I? I have to come up with a guess. So JOMO would be joy of missing out.
Is that your guess?
That's my guess.
You are correct.
What?
Yeah, that's
no
crazy.
No way.
So it really is so like, you know, and really it's kind of a generational and not like this generation has this, but it is like, I feel like when I was younger, I definitely had a lot more FOMO. And now as I get older and like I have Tori and Naomi, like there's a little bit of JOMO going on.
Absolutely.
Like, I am so glad I'm not out like at. Out right now.
Right.
Or like at a party or over there. Like, I'm just glad to be home.
Yeah. There comes a point in your life where there's a Friday night. Usually it's after you're married. Although I wouldn't know about not being married and coming to this point in life because I was married at 21.
Right.
But there comes a point where you're sitting at home on a Friday night and you start to have that urge of, ooh, I need to be doing something. And then you go, wait.
Nope.
A voice inside, the voice of wisdom and maturity says, wait, check it out. How awesome is this? You're doing nothing.
Right.
That's JOMO right there.
It, you know, it's when Tori and I were dating, we'd go to the movies like once a week, I feel like.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, COVID obviously hit, but we haven't been to the movies in a year and a half. Like,
yeah.
It's been so long. And a big deal, part of it is just like, we can watch a movie at home. Like,
yeah.
It's so much easier. And now, especially with Naomi here, like it's just, there's a whole nother layer added to it. So
right.
Now she can go to bed about 8:30, and then we can watch something on TV, and it's just so much easier.
Yeah.
So yeah, JOMO.
JOMO, the joy of missing out.
I am so surprised. You were like, I'm going to guess something crazy. And
yeah. What is that voice you're doing?
I don't know.
It sounds like an old, like you're trying. I'm
Phil,
not that old, Lucas.
Just like most of my life, I don't know what I'm doing. I just pretend.
We're just
to
rolling
see what
with it.
Yeah, yeah, here we are.
So it's time now.
Coffee.
It's time for Dead Stories with Lucas.
Hey, and this
which
week,
is nearly imperceptible from Gen Z word of the week.
That's the plan. We use all the same jingles. It saves us money.
It saves us a lot on royalties.
Yeah. We pay no one.
All right.
Yeah. So it's Dad Stories with Lucas. As promised, we are back to Dad Stories.
You actual can guess, human dad stories.
Guess now. Poop or no poop. Phil, you can guess.
I'm guessing poop.
Do you want to put a wager on it?
No.
Okay. Because you would lose. Maybe. I just gave it away. All
Lucas,
right.
We really have to work on this part of the your skills of podcasting.
Guess who can't keep a secret? It's
That's
me.
So true.
It's me.
That is true, Lucas. Yeah. You are a teller.
That sounds like me.
Lucas is Mr. Good News or Mr. News. Gotta tell you,
I've kept a few secrets in my life.
Good for you. There's at least that one.
Yeah, one time my friend Braxton bribed me with video games for not telling his parents he opened all of his Christmas presents early.
You just told the secret!
He's too old to get grounded. It's fine.
All right, go ahead.
Anyway, so this last weekend was Easter, and Saturday was the Easter extravaganza here at Eastwood.
Egg-stravaganza. You have to pronounce that correctly.
Egg-stravaganza.
Egg-stravaganza.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a fitting name, kind of cliche, but that's okay. We're not too cool for that.
No, we're not.
Eastwood would never be defined as a hipster church.
No, yeah, not at all.
A little cliche, and that's fine. So anyway, there's the egg hunts going on. And the first egg hunt of the day is the crawlers to two-year-olds. So this is Naomi's egg hunt, and we get to carry her out. So I am working the microphone. I'm like the MC of the event. And so I get it started, and I'm like, 3, 2, 1, go! And all the parents run out there with their little babies, and the two-year-old's like falling over themselves. And Tori like gets Naomi and grabs, you know, I think it was like 10 eggs, and just puts them beside her so that she can like crawl over and pick them up and shake them and stuff. And then this little girl like runs up to us, and there's Tori and I and my little sister Leah are all standing there, and this little girl looks at us and then looks down at the pile of eggs and then looks at us and then looks at the pile of eggs and then looks at Naomi and then reaches down super slowly and grabs an egg and picks it up super, looks over at me as she puts it in her basket, stands there for a second to see if we're going to say anything, and then takes off running. But we're like, so to put this in perspective.
So these were your eggs, or are these just a found pile of eggs?
These are eggs we've piled up, and we were just getting pictures of Naomi on her first ever egg hunt.
Oh, with their eggs. Okay.
So we took, just to put it in perspective, this egg hunt, all day we had 15,000 eggs spread out. And then at that specific egg hunt, there were probably, I don't know, over 1,000 eggs
out there.
And this little girl has an Easter basket full and comes up and is like,
wait.
Wait, there's a pile there.
There's a kid
and
with a pile.
It's surrounded by people, but they're not in her basket. Like, sorry, I didn't get them in the Walmart sack, honey. Like, just want to keep pictures of my daughter. But it was so funny that she like looked slowly, took it slowly, and then ran off as fast as she could. They didn't see me. It's like a T-Rex.
I don't know. Maybe she's seen her dad do something like that. You
it's
know,
probably
her,
true.
Older siblings have done that to her. I'll guarantee you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Anyway, it was funny. I'm not. You know, it was fine, but kind of cute. Anyway. But great time. Enjoyed Naomi's first Easter. Well, yeah, her first Easter, because she was born after Easter last year. I keep forgetting that. So
yeah, she's not quite a year old.
Not yet. Your first birthday is the next Sunday.
Sunday,
the 18th. So,
all right, we get to have a Naomi's birthday episode. Whoop, whoop. Maybe
birthday bash for Naomi.
Yeah. So, Dad Stories, if you guessed that there would be poop as I did, then you lose.
You lose.
I now owe Lucas nothing.
Well, I mean, I think you still owe me breakfast at some point.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
breakfast. Yeah.
Breakfast. Anyway, Phil, so...
what are we talking about today? Because today, so last week, we talked about something I want to talk about. We did not divulge this to Lucas beforehand. Today, it's the opposite. Lucas has figured out what he wants to talk about. And this could be... Folks, please, don't write nasty letters. This is Lucas's first time to try this.
Hey, I pick what we're going to talk about at least 10% of the time, Phil.
You used to do it all the time. Didn't you used to always decide what we're going to talk about and I didn't know?
I don't know. It's been so long.
I tried to listen to the first episode. It's totally different.
It is crazy. Yeah, let me just say, like, if this is your first time listening, like, I'm going to go back to the beginning and start.
Yeah, the first episode, here's my intro. I'm like, well, okay, here we go. I think we're doing a podcast.
Maybe we should re-record those episodes just with the same content, just re-ups.
No.
Anyway.
So great.
Hey, yeah, we've definitely found a rhythm. And this rhythm last week led us to heresy.
Yeah, lots of heresy.
To discuss an ancient heresy.
Pelagianism.
Pelagianism. So I wanted to go even older and kind of the beginning, well, you know, maybe not the beginning, but it's this weird, weird segment of Christian history that is really the first time Christianity wasn't persecuted. And this is under the Roman Emperor Constantine.
Constantine, yeah,
who
interesting.
Takes and kind of forces Christianity.
And this is
as
what
the,
century? Do you know? So when would Constantine have you?
It would have been between year like 306 to 337.
Okay, so this would have been just before, like a century or so before Pelagius.
Yeah, so this is kind of getting set up to where there's someone even say, hey, that's heresy.
Right.
Because at this, before this, the church was under someone's thumb all the time. You know, someone
right, and
was,
the church was really
oppressing them.
Kind of underground. It was house churches. Yeah. It was meeting in the synagogues or a meeting. It was more of a Jewish sect for in large part. And yeah, so at this point during Constantine, it becomes
the national religion. And I think that's really what I want to talk about.
Of the Roman Empire, right?
Of the Roman Empire, yeah. Yes. So why is it that that is not a good thing? Because you think, the whole country has to be Christian then.
Can you kind of tell the story of what Constantine did and why? Do you have some of that information for us to give us a background?
Do you have some of that information to give us a background?
No, I don't. I mean, I know that at some point he decided that, you know,
well,
that
yeah,
Christianity
so Constantine,
should be the national religion of the Roman Empire.
Constantine becomes the emperor. He makes Christianity the state religion, and he demanded a unified vision for the new faith, which was attempted at the First Council of Nicaea?
Yeah, the Nicene, like the Nicene Creed. If you hear people talk about the Nicene Creed, the Council of, I don't
so
know how you pronounce
Nicaea?
That. Probably Nicaea. Yeah.
So,
okay.
So this is kind of the first heresies are like, they're like, no, that's wrong, that's wrong. They try to like build and say, this is what the faith is, which isn't a bad thing. But it also is when they say that women are kind of second class in the church and they're just as helpers. And so they kind of start to interpret scripture in some ways that maybe now we look and say, yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
Completely agree with that.
So why would it, you're asking me, why would it be a bad thing?
Yes. Why would it be a bad thing for it to be the national religion of Rome? And we can kind of look back and see what happened. But I think, too, you have kind of a cry, and especially like middle school Lucas would say, why wouldn't we just make everybody be a Christian? Like that would fix the country. We know that's not true. More mature Lucas knows that's not true. So why is that not a good idea?
Yeah. I mean, I think about my experience in even teaching in a Christian high school. And it really, and I watched this progression. It's interesting you say middle school Lucas would have been all for it.
Yeah.
And then as you get older, a couple of things start to happen. You start to think for yourself a little more.
Right.
And I watched kids who were in middle school, and this is not just at a Christian school, but it was very pronounced at a Christian school, where you were sort of almost required to come walk into your school every day and be a good Christian. I mean, that was really part. You were expected to go to chapel and worship the Lord. And so if a kid walks into that, if an elementary kid walks in and he's told to worship the Lord or even raise his hands or clap his hands or jump up and down in a circle, he's like, okay. God is, God made the world. Yay, God. You know, it's
woo-hoo!
Okay. And in middle school, most kids are okay. You get to a certain point, eighth, ninth grade, and you start to go, wait, what if I don't really think, what if I don't really feel that? Or if I don't really think that? Or if I don't, what if I don't want to do that? You know, and you start becoming a lot more independent.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens to those kids who then are told, nope, you have to stand up. You know, we would have teachers. And I would watch this because I was a part of the worship leading team. I led the students who led worship. And I would watch these teachers, you know, we would say, stand up and sing the song with us. And there would be kids who would not stand up. And there were even times that we said from the stage, it's okay if you don't want to stand up. But the teachers would then go through the aisles and make all the kids stand up.
You will worship
as
Christ.
If you will worship God and you will love him with your whole heart. And so this was what we watched, was a lot of kids becoming very bitter against God.
Yeah.
And against the church because they felt like they had been forced to do something that was insincere. And so they felt like, well, the whole thing was a joke.
Yeah.
Because to them, they said, well, if I can just pretend and that's enough for you, my authorities, if it's enough for me just to fake it, then maybe you're faking it. You know what I mean? Maybe you're not, because I don't know what's a good analogy for that. But I think in their minds, it's very clear to them: if you think it's okay for me to fake it, then I think you're probably faking it too.
Yeah, yeah. If all this is standing up and doing the right motions, then you're just standing up and doing the right motions.
Exactly. Yeah.
It
redefines Christianity for them.
Exactly. As just it's what you do.
What do we call it? A ritual. It's just ritual. It's empty ritual.
Yes, there you go. That's good. Yeah. It's like those guys cutting themselves for bail.
Exactly.
It's nothing.
There's nothing to it. There's nothing real behind it. And that's a real problem when you're a teenager, especially, or a young adult.
Yeah.
As at some point in there, you become very, very sensitive to things that are not sincere.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great example, like you talked about here with the teachers and the students, but it's really for, like, you know, you see kids and their parents, and kids have their parents' faith. And so if the parents have an authentic faith and love Jesus for real, but their kids go to church because their parents take them,
yeah,
and they're there because that's what mom and dad went through. I mean, my own faith began that way, right?
Right.
I just wanted to follow rules and make my parents and my grandparents happy. And so I was at church and I was memorizing scripture. And I was like, I was the king of Awana for a long time. I knew all the verses.
Is there an actual king in Awana?
I don't know, but oh, okay. I would have been it.
You would have been.
Techno king of Awana. Thanks, Elon. Anyway, so I was just really good at following the rules, but at 15, that faith went from being my parents' faith to my own. And so I see here, you know, as a national faith in Rome, and, you know, some people have talked about that here, or like this is a Christian nation. Well, like if it's if it's just your emperor's faith becoming your own, like that's not a good thing. And like we see here, they used that to consolidate power.
Right.
You know, and one of the things they did, they took power away from women in the country because they were getting too much within the church, and said, "Nope, we're gonna take that from you." And so they used this and twisted it to take power for themselves.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's one thing that people who have complained about the Roman Catholic Church have complained about from day one is their sort of the connection to government. But to politics, their connection to the political power, establishment. Man, my words are not coming out straight.
It's been a rough day for you, Phil.
Well, I spilled my Coke earlier, and I haven't had quite enough caffeine in the last few minutes.
I'm so sorry. Yeah,
It was sad. Yeah, so I would also say that, you know, it reminds me kind of like you said, the people want to say this is a Christian nation, and I would definitely agree that the country was founded on some very biblical principles. The idea of a free country really only works, according to our founding fathers, if all these free people have an idea that morality comes from God.
Right.
And that truth is a real thing, and that truth comes from God, that freedom comes from God. I was reading something that Jefferson wrote, and he is not one of the most quote-unquote Christian. He would not have been an evangelical. He was more of a deist. Mm-hmm. He just believed in God, but he believed very strongly that our government really only works if we believe that our freedoms are a gift of God, that there's a higher authority, because then if without that higher authority, we become anarchists. And he was not an anarchist. And it almost seems like the argument today is, well, either you're a Christian nation or you're an anarchist. And I think, in particular, Jefferson would have said, no, there's something in between.
Yeah.
There's a balance between making the church a part of the government and taking the church completely out of
everything,
the life of our nation.
Yeah.
So what is that balance, Lucas? Is that an okay question to ask, or do you want to ask your own question?
No, I don't think that's a bad question. I think it, you know, that balance is struck up, but that balance can be struck where the government and the church don't have to be one entity as long as the government allows the church to exist, right? And that's what you see, like, in in the Soviet Union and within communism, they were trying to eradicate religion from the lives of the people,
right,
in order for them to only turn to the government.
Right.
And
in Nazi Germany, the same thing.
This exactly.
is where, you know, they allowed all the churches to exist, but they had to agree to certain doctrines
and
certain
this,
things.
You
right.
can't preach that. We need to pre-approve your sermons.
Right.
And that's what, you know, in China, it's the same deal. There's the Church of China that's allowed to exist, but they're only allowed to preach these certain things.
Right.
And then the rest of the church is oppressed and is underground. And yet we see the church thriving.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So which is better? Which is better for the church?
I think, honestly, you look through history, the church is better when it is oppressed.
When it's persecuted.
Whenever it actually costs you something to follow Christ, all of the sudden, all you have left are legit followers of Christ.
Yeah.
There's no more mediocrity and there's no more melancholy in following Christ
right.
because it could cost you your life or jail
Absolutely.
Time. It could cost you anything. And for a long time in America, it's cost us nothing.
Right.
To follow Christ. And therefore, it's kind of just the popular thing to do. And now it doesn't even cost us much, but there's certain statements you could say that might cost you something.
Well, now I think there are certain things, and they're more political right now, but because of this sort of real connection between like the political right and Christianity, there's certain things that I feel very strongly that I won't say on social media
because
I think, and there, I'll just say, no, wait a minute, I got to sweep all the sort of political stuff out of this.
Right.
And make sure that it doesn't sound like I'm espousing some right-wing political craziness. Not that all right-wing is crazy, okay? Don't get me wrong.
You heard it here first. Phil's a liberal.
Phil's a liberal, though. If you know me, you know I'm not a liberal. But I'm not one of those that thinks that you have to believe a certain way in order to be a Christian American. But there are things I won't say because I'm like, that would sound...
Yeah, for sure. And I think social media is definitely
I would
not
be persecuted almost.
So here's,
you know?
For our listeners, like social media is not the place to change someone's mind.
Yeah.
Right? It's not going to work. It's just going to start a fire and then you can walk away from it. And if that's what you like to do in your free time, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
hey,
you know,
hold on a second. Let's pause for a second. I think you're talking to the wrong side of your mic. Definitely talking to the wrong side of your mic.
Do we have to start over now?
No.
I blame Kyle. Wow.
You sound so much better.
I told you I sounded funny earlier.
You sounded so funny. Wow.
If you hear my voice sounding better all of a sudden, it's because I've fixed the mic.
You've got your accent back, Lucas.
Hey, jolly old good chap. Pip, pip, cheerio and all that.
You're talking the wrong side of the mic. You sound like an American.
Wow. Jeevers, mate.
All right. So, we were talking about the church is always better when it's persecuted.
And I think that's really where I wanted to go today, is just talking about how, like, we talk about, well, like, they're trying to persecute the church and this is terrible and we need to step up and rise up as the church. And I'm thinking we need to rise up at the church, but not just to say, don't persecute us, but just to share the gospel and love people.
Yeah.
No matter what it costs.
Exactly. And it's so hard because I understand that, you know, if I hear about a kid who gets excluded from sharing his faith on his college campus, I really kind of root for the lawyers that want to go tell that school, no, you can't stop this kid from sharing his faith.
Right.
On the other hand, I think, my good friend who works for Voice of the Martyrs said that someone asked him one day, you're trying to stop persecution. He said, no, actually, I think I'm trying to make persecution worse.
Yeah.
You know, because he's supporting people that are preaching the gospel in places where they are persecuted for it. He wants them to be able to continue to do the right thing, even though they suffer for it. And he is working, and that organization does work to alleviate the suffering of those who are persecuted. But they're not trying to stop persecution because they, you know, and I suppose in a way they might advocate for government change that would help those people, but that's not their main goal.
Right.
Their main goal is these people are doing what's right and we want to support them.
Exactly.
Regardless of what their government says.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, for each of us here, it's easy to go one of two directions where we think anything that ever bad happens to us is persecution. Or
right.
We go, we're in America. No one's ever persecuted at all for their faith, which has a little bit of truth to it.
Yeah.
But I think there are minor things that could happen that will cost you something.
Right.
And I think the deal is don't be afraid to have to pay a price for your faith.
But make sure it's for your faith and not for being dumb.
Exactly. Like it's you can't go like throw a brick through a window and go, I'm being persecuted for the gospel.
Right.
No, you're being persecuted for throwing a brick through a window.
Well, and for being a jerk either. Let's don't use your faith as a brick to throw through someone's window metaphorically.
Or
you know
your
what I'm
faith
saying?
For an excuse for your political views. I mean, you talked about politics
right.
earlier, but
exactly.
Maybe you're being persecuted for being conservative or persecuted for being liberal, but that doesn't always mean that it's your faith. Even if it's a faith,
right.
you feel like it's a faith-based reason
yeah.
for holding that political view, that doesn't mean it's persecuting your faith.
Right. And there really is some maturity and some thought that it takes to get into that, because it feels like to me that everything I believe comes from my faith because I'm a Christian. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because in my mind, it's all connected. When I think about my political views and ideas, I tend to think that God agrees with me. You know, just naturally,
yeah.
I tend to think that I got that from the Bible, right? But
yeah,
I really have to examine some of the stuff I believe politically is not necessarily Christian.
Yeah, when
it's
I look
just
at,
what I think about the way people should,
when
the
I look
way
at
government should be.
Jesus's political views, I notice there aren't any.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I see Jesus going on and with his life, loving the poor.
Right.
I see him loving the widow and the orphan. I see him healing the blind and the sick. I see him healing the lame. I see Jesus preaching the gospel. I see Jesus teaching people. I see Jesus doing all of these things.
And
but
paying
I,
his taxes.
And paying his taxes. I see him not bowing to government authority, but I see him respecting government authority is a
right.
good way to put it. And so when we look at the life of Christ, he's separated and he doesn't go after political things because he's just going to live what's supposed to live. And you could say, well, there was no voting back then. And you're right.
That's true. And so, which brings up another subject, but go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying here, I think it boils back down and we're getting kind of going a different direction, which is fine, but it's, you've got to live your faith before you vote your faith.
Yes.
You've got to live your faith before you politic your faith, because it's really easy for me to go, hey, this politician's going to change everything, when the record shows that politician's probably not going to change anything.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to get elected and they're going to fight for it, but it's not going to always work. But you can go and find someone that needs to be loved where God has called you in the community you're in and love them and do what Christ did and make a huge difference, not just in the life of that person, but in your community.
Mm.
Right. And this is when we talked months ago, you know, we just shared good news. We wanted to find good news in all of the craziness. And
right.
you could see how that good news has these ripple effects.
Yeah.
And so in the same way for us, right, if we're loving people, if we're discipling, if we're seeking the Lord and to glorify him and to love God and love others, that's going to do way more than any political agenda ever could.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think about two scriptures when it comes to the intersection of politics and faith. And one is that Jesus said to Pontius Pilate, and this is what is called the good confession. You know, when Jesus made the good confession before Pontius Pilate, what did he say? He said, my kingdom is not of this world.
Mm.
And I think we have to make that confession. That's the good confession of our faith. If you can boil it down to anything, and you could probably say, you know, some theologian may say, well, it's this or it's that. But for sure, a big part of it was the good confession that Jesus made before Pontius Pilate, my kingdom is not of this world. And we have to start with that.
Yeah.
The next thing I think about is that, well, when it comes to government, I think one of the big things that we're told is to, well, we're told to submit to governing authorities because there's no yeah. authority except from God. The next thing we're told to do is pray for governing
yeah.
authorities so that we may have a quiet life and be free to share our faith. So I think it's okay to pray for your government and
yeah.
pray that we will not be persecuted,
yeah.
That we will be able to freely exercise our faith. But then, you know, do we really freely exercise our faith in all the freedom that we do have?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and we see a lot of times whenever we are free to exercise our faith, like in America, right? A
right.
lot of times it leads to
a lot of us just being kind of halfway Christians. You know,
kind of apathetic.
Apathetic. That's a great word for it. We catch the great disease of apathy.
Yeah.
And so it's important to, even if we're not majorly persecuted in our lifetime, which would be great if we weren't. I mean, it'd be nice for me if I didn't have to worry about getting whipped for,
right,
for living.
Yeah.
But living like it's going to cost me something, living in that it's free. I don't know. What I'm trying to say here is to stay motivated, even though you won't be persecuted for
To take advantage of the fact that
there
you
it is.
Won't
take
be
advantage of it.
Put in jail for sharing your faith.
We're not even facing real persecution. We're just facing people maybe being mad at us, or maybe I know I got a worse grade in a class one time because I shared my faith and even just stood up for one view in the class that was from my faith. They were kind of attacking pastors, and I stood up for it, and it affected my grade. And that's not, I mean, I passed. It's not like it's even, it doesn't matter. It's not real
persecution.
It didn't
affect your life.
But it's, you know, standing up and doing it and taking advantage of the freedom that we have to do it. There's not a serious consequence. You're not going to be thrown in prison for it. You're not going to be flogged or killed for it in most cases.
Right. Yeah.
Now, our Russian listeners, maybe so.
Right.
So keep preaching.
No kidding.
Man.
We do.
We're
I was looking
for you.
I was looking at downloads. Several in Europe. But there might be places where you would listen to this podcast and you might actually be persecuted. Most of us, no.
Yeah.
Most of us, we struggle as Mother Teresa talked about. You know. She said she felt sorry for the Americans. And people said, what are you talking about? The kind of poverty that you're around every day in Calcutta, India. She dealt with starving and diseased people with no money. And you know, every day she was ministering to these, what we consider the most unfortunate people on the planet. And she said, oh, Americans suffer from a much different kind of poverty.
Yeah.
It's a spiritual poverty because we don't, and partly because we don't have that persecution. We don't have that drive. Yeah. We don't have that fight going on in our lives.
And there's so many living in the dark that think they're in the light. They don't even realize they're blind.
Mm.
And so that we talked about, blessed are the poor in spirit.
Right.
We just don't realize we are.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mother Teresa. Great.
Yeah.
Lady.
A very sobering kind of topic here today.
Yeah.
You thought it'd be fun to talk about Constantine, didn't you, Lucas?
Nope. I thought it'd be fun to talk with you, though, Phil.
It's always fun to talk with you, Lucas.
So, culture-wise, I was just going to say I haven't watched Captain America and the Winter Soldier and Falcon yet.
The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I've only watched one episode, and my wife didn't like it because it was too...
Come on over, Phil. We'll watch
action.
The whole
yeah,
thing.
We need to watch the whole thing together, I guess. But I had a culture thing I wanted to talk about, and I can't remember what it was.
It's not Alexa anymore.
It's not
is
Alexa
it?
Farting.
Okay,
it seemed like it was fart related, though.
Oh dear.
I can't recall. Phil, I can't remember what it was now.
Gassy lassie.
I don't know. I can't remember.
Hey, Phil. The NFL draft is coming up next, or the end of this month. Who do you want your Chiefs to draft?
Don't know. Don't care.
Cool.
I'm hoping maybe an offensive lineman or two, because I think that was that's always, in my opinion, the key.
All right.
To great success in the NFL.
Here's the plan,
offensive
Phil.
Line.
The draft is the last week in April. Let's plan on doing a breakfast food draft.
Okay.
In April, you and I will draft our best breakfast.
Okay.
And then we'll let the listeners vote for which breakfast is better.
Oh, all right. Sounds good.
So that's coming the last week of this month, the last Tuesday of this month. We'll record that episode.
You know,
and put it out
Lucas,
there, so.
When you plan something, then you actually have to do it.
Phil, we don't plan much for that reason. So, that's the plan.
Okay, that's the plan.
I just planned it right here in my head.
Yes, Lucas has made a plan. So, hard truth from Constantine's, from the lesson about Constantine.
Hard truth is sometimes we need to be persecuted to be the Christians we're made to be.
Yeah. I think maybe we all, do we need to pray that we're persecuted? That sounds terrible.
I think Oswald Chambers talks about, you know, when you experience suffering, pray that you know God better because of it, not that you come out of it. So don't pray for the suffering to end, but pray that you would know God more because of that suffering.
Oswald Chambers.
Good old Ozzy.
Good guy.
Good awesome. Guy. All right, that was some good oatmeal. All yeah. right, we are glad that you have chosen to listen to us today and hopefully every week. Thanks for joining us. We love you guys. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, please send those over to secondbreakfast777@gmail.com.
Or
Phil at EastwoodTulsa.com. or Lucas at EastwoodTulsa.com.
Or secondbreakfast777@gmail.com.
And if you have any complaints, please send them over to Kyle at whatever his email address is.
Yeah.
We don't actually know because...
Kyle, what's your email? We'll insert Kyle's email here.
All right. Well, we love you guys. We want to thank you. Phil, any last words?
What was that? I don't even know what that was.
It was a turkey.
Love and babies.
Woo. You guys are loud today.
All right.
Are you going to rap out on this music, Lucas?
I don't. I'm going to. Let me try to attempt this rap here.
All right.
Yeah. Settlers of Catan, you know I'm the best. I like to corner the market on everything best. You know I can make all the settlements. And this isn't rap nor hip hop. I don't know how to rap.
But you should see my backup
trap.
Dancing. It's amazing.
All right, I'm going to stop. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.